Sorry, guys. Hello. Hi, everyone.
Yeah, hi. Whew. Well, it's been a little while and some stuff happened. there she is, baby, barking up a storm.
We're back at it. It's been a minute. It's been so long.
It's been a while.
Where have we been?
I mean, I went to Arizona.
And I went to the Ukraine, as it's pronounced.
Yep.
By the native people of
Ukraine with their thick Central American accent.
The friggin' influencers and Twitch streamers and armchair experts talking about it online, I spent the last 2 weeks in the war-torn fields of Luhansk, which it's kind of like I was trying to get to Verdansk in war zone, but then I just got on the wrong flight. So I've been in Ukraine. I'm so sorry we missed a whole week, Lux.
We missed a whole week for like a lot of reasons, mostly that you were in Ukraine, right? You're sort of in Ukraine as things were heating up and left right before they got too hot.
Well, I fixed things and invasion.
Is that what they are now? Since the situation's fixed, that's what we're calling this.
It feels patched up at least a little bit, you know, like they can at least get down the road. Call of Duty just got postponed a year. Are they rewriting it to be about Ukraine? are they pivoting?
They're like, oh my God, now's our chance to really get beat on time.
Mm-hmm. And to really rewrite history.
Yeah, man.
To say that I wasn't there. how you feeling, bud? I mean, it's been, we're so sorry once again, audience. You know, it has been a crazy personal time for both of us. We've both been very busy and things did fall to the wayside. And of course, listen, if something's going to fall to the wayside, it's going to be the Game Boys podcast.
Yeah, it's true. We are disposable, both as a content and as people.
Mm-hmm. I try to delete the episodes, but Lux has de-admined me.
I haven't actually done anything. I think you just don't understand what the buttons do.
But yeah, guys, it's 2 weeks late, but here we are. Welcome to the Game Boys podcast. I am war reporter and hero of the East, Griffin.
And I'm Lux, just regular.
Yep, just regular.
Nothing really going on here.
No direction.
No heroism, no reporting.
I think if you really like got down and really dug in, you could be of the North, perhaps.
Yeah, I could be of the North. I mean, I could also be of the South because I am the Southmost member of the show.
That's true. But something about the North and you, I don't know. Like
my entire early life.
Well, and also the fact that, you also spent a lot of time in the convoy in Canada last week.
Right. Well, yeah. I was eating Timbits and throwing the bags on the side of the road to create a path so I could find my way home.
Did you hear that they took all those guys' PS5s?
No, but they deserve it.
Oh, really? They don't deserve to have PS5s.
Yeah, no, they're bad gamers.
That's a big statement and a gotcha moment that I set you up for.
Here's why it's true and not a hot take or problematic.
Okay.
If they were real gamers, would they really be doing a convoy during the release of Horizon Forbidden West?
That's what's so tough about this, and honestly why I don't think Russia has fully invaded yet, because Elden Ring hasn't even come out.
Right. Except that's what I'm saying is that, yeah, for sure. I mean,
everyone's kind of waiting.
That's why we're dubious. I mean, Russia has sent peacekeeping troops into Ukraine, but, you know, dubious exactly how real that is, because, yeah, all their gamer soldiers are waiting on Elden Ring. And that's exactly why you can know that these convoy gamers aren't real gamers. Because if they were real gamers, they would have been home for Forbidden West and they'd be home for Elden Ring.
Yeah. The homeland will be safe until someone 100% the game and then it's back on.
So don't you do
probably
it.
2 weeks, a week.
Yeah, probably less. But fucking Firmsoft people are freaks.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, okay, so wait, why did these PS5s demand to be taken? Deserve to be taken?
Oh, because they're a fake game. Is this a real thing that happened?
No.
Okay, good, because they're fakes. And then, yeah,
all their bank accounts have been frozen, and like all their monies have been tied up.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the game you play when you like have a like pretty shady fundraising operation. You kind of set yourself up for shit like that to happen to you. So that sucks. I mean, one of the things about it that's like kind of funny that I see people see is people being like, if they could do this to them, what will they do to leftist protest? And it's like, homie, they've been doing this to leftist protest. Like, this isn't, it would mean that nothing has changed.
Yeah.
It's a very funny and weird position to take. There are reasons to be mad about it, I think. I mean, I personally think it's like, whatever, like, they're like explicitly a fascist movement, like fuck them. But like the argument of it'll cause a greater harm to the left is very silly and sort of ahistorical to me.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like, if we're whatever about it in certain cases, then why do we deserve to care about it for our cases? Is, I guess, the argument.
I think there's like an obvious moral distinction, I guess. Like, it's cool to not be mean to the people who aren't racist and have like running an explicitly fascist operation, and you have more leeway to be assholes to people who are doing that, I think is like a not unreasonable sort of moral bright line to draw.
I think
that's a fair position to take.
Yeah, that's an easy one. You just actually, guys, that one's in accessibility settings. You turn that on, it's a little gold trail. It's gonna do you good.
That's when you activate the objective finder. It's like, that one's pretty straightforward. Right. Yeah. I mean, if it were like, we're enacting new universal powers that we'll use in all cases, I would have more stress about it. But because so many of these tools have been already used in cases of people. The only thing that's notable about this is that they're using the same things they use on leftist protesters on conservative protesters, right? Like, leftist protesters have had their bank accounts frozen before and, like, have had, like, been tailed and, like, all this shit already.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my point is that it's, like, it's every element of it that treats it something new is silly. It's just, like, they're doing it to the bad people for once.
Which is, like, I guess.
Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like how many people's bank accounts got frozen. I don't even know. I don't even know how many people are out there. I don't even know if I'm willing to say that all the people out there are necessarily bad people. I'm sure there are a lot of bad people there.
Well, that's also the thing is like, because we don't know how many bank accounts got frozen and shit, it's like the only reporting we have on this is like the shit they're saying, and they've already like lied about a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
So like, it's hard to like, you know, do I generally think that countries should invoke emergency powers to deal with protests? Like, probably not.
Right. Why don't you use those emergency powers to get some more PS fucking fives in the country? Okay.
Yeah. Then you wouldn't have a trucker fucking convoy because everyone playing Horizon Forbidden West.
That's the ultimate solution to a lot of stuff. If you do want to sedate the populace, there is a way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to agree with some of your points there. I'm just, listen, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to free Haley, who has been trapped in a Canadian jail for the last couple of weeks. So she's producing the show still from there. They're really, it's nice in those jails.
Yeah, America and Canada are very different in terms of like their carceral treatment, right? Like carceral treatment. Like,
they have better Wi-Fi than Lux.
Yeah. No, Haley's setup is like, it's sort of tech-wise, like way better than mine right now.
But we have to free her. Yeah. But hey, you know what? Maybe when we do, she won't want to go because the internet's that good. Yeah. We'll have to see. It could be one of those crazy conflicts. Anyways, stay tuned for that. Haley, thank you for producing the show. She's back this week. And Lux, you know, a lot's happened. There's been so many like different news stories and things. It's really hard to know where to start. I don't know if you want to talk about games. I've been playing a game. I don't know what you've been doing.
I've been playing some games.
Okay, why don't you start?
I I've been playing, well, I mean, I've been playing Horizon Forbidden West. It's been my main
Yes, let's go. I have as well, Lux. I have as well been playing Horizon Forbidden West. And you know what? I'll say right off the top. This is the first game that you got to buy the PS5 for.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to hold up for me a lot better than Deathloop did. I think playing Deathloop on not the PS5 does like rob you of the best things about it in a lot of ways. So I think you could pretty reasonably say that Deathloop's the first game that you kind of need to play.
But it's a bad game, so right. You don't. So yeah. Then that's out.
That's what I was saying. It's like you need, it's like kind of the first game where you need the PS5 to like get the most out of it. But is it the first game that you need a PS5 because you need to play it? No.
Right.
But Forbidden West, yes.
I mean, wow. What a sort of blockbuster sequel experience, sort of like a Terminator 2, in terms of sequels, where it's like, you know, they built a lot of foundations in the first one and then they just like took all that and they just turned this dial like up to 11. And it's just like everything is just like firing on like these like sequel cylinders that are just like more confident and like more engaging than the last one.
Yeah, totally. And it's just like it's the first. Like, I think this has been a weird part, I think, of the PS5 transition for me has been that every time like a next gen console comes out, the first game you play that's like for it has like this graphics jump that makes you be like, oh, wowza, you know, like that's right. All that's like built into the process. And that didn't really happen.
It happened with Demon's Souls, but that's like an old game that was like remade. So like while it like looked next gen, it functionally didn't feel next gen.
Yeah. And I don't think it looked next gen in the way that Horizon Forbidden West looks next gen. There are things about it. Like, I've not gotten mega far because this was also the first weekend of the new Wrestle Show. And so I didn't really play it on Saturday and I slept all day Sunday. And so I only played it a little bit on Monday.
Early in it to it.
But there's a part, have you climbed the spear or whatever and found that hologram where the guy's like, go to the Forbidden West?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're climbing the spear, looking down, the amount of small detail in what the ground looks like when you look down from like hundreds and hundreds of feet above it is just like so far beyond sort of any console gaming or frankly, even PC gaming. I guess it's accessible via PC gaming, but no one has like a 50 inch 4K. I mean, not no one, but most people have a 50 inch 4K monitor for the PC chilling. And so like putting that on like 50 inches 4K with that much detail, with like the HDR color stuff, like,
yeah, because a big problem is like PCs can do 4K, but like that kind of 4K with all new game, with a brand new game and keeping it around 60 frames per second, that's for only an incredibly expensive PC.
Yeah. And then you bring like the default TV size versus default computer or monitor size into it. It's like not even. Yeah. But man,
it's a great argument for consoles for this generation.
Yeah. It's like that. There's a lot of stuff in there where I was like, holy moly, like just the detail and like the individual plants and shit is out of control.
Yeah.
But that one shot, I just have like, you're looking down, there's like a cliff and there's like a lower basin of the valley and there's detail in the cliff and there's the same detail lower, but it's like degraded by distance. And like, it looks unbelievable.
And that's like just dirt. And then you see a massive robot dinosaur with all these different intricate parts on it that are like also part of the design of the game. Like, it's just like, oh my God, the first couple hours you do have to just stop and stare a lot.
Yeah. Especially I think the robots are really good. It also comp to the first game, because the first game, one thing I really loved was how the robots moved. Like the way they'd like wiggle or like be kind of jerky or whatever as they moved around the screen. What this game does, really impressive to me, is it maintained that and then added a lot of small, like very, very small details that show you that movement to a really specific degree. Like you can see the wires moving and the gears and like the joints in like such detail. And it's really just like unreal. Like, it's so far beyond like anything
that's playable. It's unreal to look at. It's almost as like if there's an engine called Unreal. I don't know if it's Unreal Engine.
I don't think it is.
But like,
I think it's too detailed to be unreal.
So the game, unfortunately, has two settings. One is like a slightly downscaled 4K where you can play at 60 frames per second. And that's what you're going to want to do for this like fast paced action movement platforming game. Like, you're going to want those frames. But there's also this resolution mode that's locked full 4K. But then you're like locked at like 30 frames per second. And once you see 60 frames per second, it's hard to go back. But there is a kind of nice little solution there, in that it's very easy to flip between the settings. So like, what I'll do a lot is in the action gameplay, I'll fucking do it 60 frames per second, fight it all out, still looks really great. But then like, if I'm on a cliff, I'm flipping the resolution on, baby.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't thought of doing that. That's a really good idea.
Because the resolution just like blows your mind. Like, it's just like looking at the details on their faces and everything. It's like, and just the sunsets. And then in that resolution mode is when you get the most enhanced ray tracing. And this is the first time where I've been like, oh, ray tracing. Oh
yeah. People like, love to talk about that thing that I still don't really understand what it is.
You will understand it now in this game. So flip for any of those gamers, I recommend 60 to play most of the game, but flip on 30 every so often. Really take that for a spin. My hope, my dearest hope, is that they can optimize PS5 exclusive games in the future to be locked 60 frames per second at 4K. And that maybe because they also had to make this game for PS4, there were still some limitations there. That's my hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing to hope for. I think that's like obviously probably pushing the bounds of sort of processing technology as it exists, like on a consumer level.
Yeah, but it might be a PS5 Pro kind of scenario that comes out like a year and a half from now.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, we'll see. I don't think it's out of the question. But either way, the game is fucking gorgeous. It's like unbelievable to look at. And
brilliant.
Like you were saying, it's not. They didn't do the thing a lot of sequels do where they're like, okay, we had a game people liked. How do we make a new game? They were like, we had a game people liked. How do we take that game and make it better? And so not a ton is different. Like, it plays pretty much the same. You have a couple of new tools. You have a couple of new like abilities and ways to interact with things. But for the most part, it's the same game. It's a new adventure. Just looks way, way better. And plays a little bit smoother because of the just very single things, and has the experience of the fucking controller, man. Oh my God.
Ooh, baby. DualSense. Yeah. Literally, it's like, it's like when I have I see all the news about Games Pass and Microsoft and all this other stuff. But then when I have this experience, this DualSense 4K experience, I'm like, this is so much more next level. And like, the problem is that not enough people have experienced it yet.
I did the zip line and I literally jumped up and was like, hey, everyone, you got to come try this.
Yeah. You have to try the zip line. Yeah. I mean, like, we've always talked about the DualSense and like how it's not just vibration. It's like, it's such an eclectic sensory experience.
Yeah. And it's so many different kinds of vibration. And like, I know, I mean, we've said this on the show at least twice, probably three times before, that like various games have finally figured out how to use it. But I'm saying it again. Finally, a game has figured out how to use it, because it's like, it gives you little bumps as you're climbing, or bigger bumps when you fall and grab something, and it scales that intensity. The zipline thing is just mind bending. It just goes to a low hum as you're going and feels like a very, I guess, slightly different version of just being on a real zipline.
Bows and arrows and shit. The one that got me, the one that was like someone I did not expect, that was kind of my zipline, was when you open future doors. Like, oh, yeah. when you open up panels, like the light on your PS5 kind of shifts and then a sound slightly emits. And then like, it feels like the door is like opening across the controller, like spreads from the center and like vibrates outwards. So it feels like you just like put your palm on the door and like opened it. I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah. It's really fucking crazy, man. It really does like elevate. So much of what, despite what so many modern games are, which is to say dumb and bad, so much of what video game design is about is creating immersion and like creating the capacity to lose yourself in the experience and like be the character. And this game really flexes a lot of different ways that the PS5 is capable of doing that past systems or even comparable systems or even PC shit just can't do.
Yeah, it's like if PC games don't start to design for this as well, they'll be left behind.
Yeah, it's
that's like the truth of it. That's the thing. Like, that's where we're at with it now. The only problem, like I said, is very few people have a PS5. So this is like army of DualSense fans is very small right now. But like, you put this controller in anyone's hands, they're going to be like, whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty mind bending, especially like the amount, like it borderline freaks me out how effective it is at just like being at like how one to one with the events on the screen it is. Like, the timing is so crazy. Like, just everything about it is so on point, and it really just makes the whole experience so much more like, you're just so much more in it.
And also, it makes you just want to waste time doing bullshit, which is exactly what an open world game should encourage you to do. Like, there's been a bunch of times where I've been like, oh, wait, what am I even doing here? Like, I was just killing a million of these robots that I just ran by. And I did it because it felt good. And that was it.
I killed them because it made me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I did. And I was like, wow, like just the world itself and like all of the visuals and the tactile feeling of it, like just, you can just totally lose yourself doing even non-objective content. It's cool. But like, I want to talk about other parts of the game because I really like a lot of other stuff that's going on here, but I do, because we're still talking kind of about like looks and stuff, I do want to give a big shout out to just like the new sort of like art and design of the world. Like, when you're climbing and stuff like that, just like the way the ruins you wrap through and around them, it's just very, very well designed and slick.
Yeah, it does feel like, I really loved all those elements in the first one, and it just feels like this game and the technical capacity really broadened their palette as far as like ways they can just make the character move or make the world look or like establish. Mm-hmm. And so now you're like, it's not always the same jump, land, climb. There's like 55 different jumps and landings and climbings that can happen. And that just makes it all feel so much more textured and like real.
Yeah. And like the first level is such a great like opening blockbuster moment, because you're fighting these like robot snakes or whatever, and like you want this big like tower to like crash on them, so you climb up this tower, and like all the platforming is really intricate and interesting, and then you're just like shooting off parts of the tower for it to collapse and give way, and then the tower's coming down, and it's just like every element of this was like a set piece that was like on like an Uncharted level, just like really, really fun, explosive, and it kind of like just felt like you were on a roller coaster, but you had more control of that roller coaster. It was like perfect balance. Yeah, it's just a fire in all cylinders there. It's so good.
All right, so what are some other things that you think are sweet about this sweet game?
Let's talk about the story for a second, because this is an interesting story. And granted, we are going to kind of avoid spoilers for what we've seen so far. And we're also very early in the game, so there's not a whole lot that we can spoil. But a lot of people say the story is actually not as great in this game. And I actually have felt the exact opposite.
I mean, to be totally honest, I thought the story in the first game was just a series of excuses for you to go climb around cool places. And I feel like the story in this game is just a series of excuses to get you to go climb around cool places. So like, I guess, I don't know. I just don't like, I mean, I haven't gotten far enough. I think the other game had this thrill of discovery where you're starting from this world where no one knows anything about the world or its cosmology or its origins. And you're finding that. And that's like very exhilarating. Mm. And obviously you can't really do that again. But I like the sense of urgency that this game has, where the sort of overall, like the initial overall stakes are set very, very quickly and very clearly. And it does feel, and the really excellent voice acting and characters portray this, that like it is not like a lot of video games where you're given a quest and some guy is just like, this is the most important thing in the world. It does feel like the most important thing in the world is the thing that you're doing.
And she's always reiterating that. She's always in a rush. People are like, stay. And she's like, no, I have to go. Like, this is like freaking urgent. So yeah, there's like a nice urgency to the storytelling for sure. And there's a much deeper like sci-fi element than ever before with this one. You know, in the first game, they do explain all the lore behind why there's like robot dinosaurs and what's going on. And they kind of like are digging even deeper into it now. And so far, the ways they're digging into it are pretty interesting. I think, I don't know if you remember this from the first one, but the big problem with the narrative in the first one is that it really only becomes interesting once you like know why you are related to the past, like future people, like the ancient civilization. And then that like informs a lot more of the story. But also the villain in the first one is really fucking cheesy. Like the Hades guy.
Yeah, I thought that was such a dumb choice in the first game to give it a kind of consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, his consciousness is of like his original programmer, who is like this douchey hacker guy at the company.
I know, but it just works so much better as like this alien unthinkable thing than as like a rude guy.
Yeah, and like the guy, I would have to say, I wouldn't have that much problem if it was based on a guy, if the guy wasn't probably the worst voice actor in the business right now. Damn. Like it, like when you want to think of like stilted bad video game acting, it's like every line out of this guy's mouth is so inhuman and just awful. It's just really hard to listen to. And he's unfortunately back in a little bit of the story of this one too, which I thought, big mistake. But hey, Lance Reddick is back, baby.
Yeah.
And he is being a messy frenemy. And we gotta love that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't like found him in his like big secrets yet, but I ran into his hologram.
Okay, so I've gotten farther than you and I have figured out his deal. And he is being a messy frenemy, and it's nice. I don't know. That part is very fun.
Well, that's even true like, in the hologram, because he's like,
yeah,
I did the bad thing because all the good things you want have to do with this bad thing. And then Aloy's like, could you have explained this to me? And he's like, no, for some reason.
He's the most condescending person ever. It's awesome. Yeah, so he's great. It's whenever he's on in a scene, it's very interesting. And I think they're doing an interesting job at like pulling me along. And like, there is a big mystery that they are like slowly revealing. And it's exciting. So yeah, I'm like, I'm not only super motivated to see where this story goes and if it does land in a good way or in a mediocre way, but I'm also just getting so lost in the side stuff.
Yeah. That's one of, I've said it, I think I've said this before. That's one of my problems with open world game design like this. that it by design takes the urgency a little bit out of the main story.
Yeah, I don't know, but the side stuff is so fun in this game.
It's I think it's good and it's worth it. It just makes it that thing that we love to talk about, ludonarrative dissonance. Like, it is the game sort of being like, it's the most important thing on earth that you do this. You got to leave every conversation before you even start, except for if you want to go find eight special plants.
If you want to become the best card game player in all of the inns.
Yeah. But I mean, that shit is really good and it's really fun. It's just like, that's one of my problems with just this whole genre.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel you on that. So far, the majority of the side things I've done have been satisfying, and like, and a lot of it has like had like cinematics too.
Yeah.
Or like big sort of like big kind of like content moments. And so it always kind of feels just kind of rewarding to do, at least for now. I'm sure at some point I'll be like, all right, we're packing it up. We're finishing the game. I can't do this all fucking year. But, you know, right now that's very fun. And it's just, you know, it's coming at a crazy time. It is coming in a crazy month, and it's a game that demands your attention for, you know, a few weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because I'm finally on the final game of my Legend of Heroes Trails game replay through.
Wow.
I finally made it.
Wow.
Then Elden Ring comes out on Friday.
And wow, I'm getting chills just every time I think about it. I'm like, how this is going to be crazy.
And then like a week, I think in a week from Friday, Project Triangle Strategy comes out.
Disgusting.
It's like, and we just had Arceus. Like, it is. I mean, we talked about this at the beginning of the year, Pod, but this is like a truly nuts time to be a James Smith.
And I feel like every like time I like pull up my phone, it's just a tweet about someone being like, Elden Ring, Elden, like the hum, the buzz is already afoot. Like, I can feel it in the fucking air.
Yeah. I mean, it is like, if it is the game that it kind of looks like it's trying to be, then that everything's crazy forever. Because like looks like it looks like it wants to be open world, dark like Soulsborne, but made easy enough that a way wider audience of people could at least start to try and engage with it. And if it can be that and maintain the tone and the thrill, then like, I mean, that's. It's an extremely ambitious thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's cool. I just like Sekiro. So I'm like, I don't need it to be more accessible in a way where you can just grind to like get better. But, you know.
But I mean, that's what hard mode shit is for.
Yeah.
And whether that's tailored to you or not. Well, A, hard mode kind of resolves all like the practical issues with that. And B, whether it's tailored to like you or me or not. And like, I've played Sekiro. I mean, I've played all of them. The ones I finished are Sekiro and Bloodborne. But like whether it's tailored to you or to me or whatever, the idea of the sort of aesthetic challenge of making a more accessible game that maintains those vibes and also adds all these layers of open world shit is just like so wildly ambitious. And it's the kind of thing that like, if they can do it, is just going to like, sort of be what the gaming conversation is for like months.
Yeah. I mean, and I think especially because it's like, it is so much bigger than their other games that there's just going to be so much content on the internet about like secrets and like finding little things. Like, people are already finding a ton of secrets and a ton of like weird hidden places and stuff. Like, that's like always been something that the designers love to do in From games, but it was always like in the context of like hallways and like locked spaces. So like seeing their idea of like surprises and tricks and traps and hints in like an open world space is just like, I don't know. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Yeah. It raises a lot of interesting possibilities. And it's just like, it, I think it'd be really interesting. I'm really interested in seeing a world where a lot of these sort of, not casual per se, but just not like Soulsborne style gamers can access that kind of game and see what that does with the discourse and what people start saying about it, and how sort of people who whose takes on game design I really like, but who never really get into the Soulsborne games, they're really difficult, etc. Like what their opinions are going to be.
I mean, I don't know. Like I saw the first boss, because a bunch of streamers got early access to play like the first boss. At least this is one of the early bosses, if not the first. And I'm like, I just don't think someone who's like bad at games will like that this is much easier for them.
Well, I don't think this is. I think there's a wide gap between the people who play and really enjoy and are super good at Soulsborne games and bad at games. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of middle space in there that in theory this game might open up to.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big false thing, or like false advertising about these Dark Souls games, is that they're like too hard, that it's like pretty much Dark Souls and just the design of them is just like a mindset and a formula that like is hard to see when you're first experiencing it, but once you see it, you can't like unsee it, and then it's just like pretty formulaic and you've got it. But like everyone just needs to commit like more than trying it for an hour. It's like, no, this is an experience that you need to spend 2 to 3 to 4 days on. And once you unlock it, there is an endless amount of joy and pleasure that awaits you. And sometimes you got to work for it. And I think that people don't want to work for it enough. And I think that they should work for it a little bit more.
All right. Well, on that note, why don't we take a quick break and then come back for a talk of Titan?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, sure. Shit.
Yeah, because we're already 37 minutes in. We haven't even gotten to this crazy episode.
Let's do it.
All right. A plank plus a plank is a bridge, and that's just the way it is.
That's why everyone was planking years ago.
Yeah. They were trying to build bridges.
Mm-hmm. Instead, y'all burned them.
Mm-hmm.
Shame for shame. So we were late. We've missed a week. So we have 2 episodes of MASH to talk about. This is our MASH rewatch.
Yep, that's the name of it.
It's getting pretty dark on the show. I never watched that show, but apparently it was a hit.
It's pretty good.
Oh yeah, you've seen it?
Yeah, I've watched some episodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of like America's anime.
Yeah. In a lot of ways it is sort of the Attack on Titan of its time.
There we go. I knew there was something there. 2 episodes, Lux.
Yeah, 2 episodes. And what episodes?
What episodes indeed?
Like, I mean, I just think the writing of this season is so fucking audacious, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so willing to go away from the huge thing that's happening to bring us to something else. Like,
yeah.
And in a way that for the most part, even though I complained about it a couple weeks ago, for the most part, still, it does work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's what's like the big event of the rumbling has happened, but the show has been like adamant on both of these episodes that's like, oh no, we're still caring all about the characters' journeys here. Like, that is first and foremost the goal and the plan, and that like this rumbling is gonna take a while.
Yeah. And it's wild. It's like, it really has done a great job of sort of putting all of our characters into such a, like, a morally ambiguous space, and also creating just like this sense of like total dread. Like this most recent episode, so many shots just had a bunch of huge titans walking in the background, like just as like set.
Yeah.
And it's, it makes the whole thing feel so fucking intense.
Yeah, there's some really just gorgeous shots of them riding along, like this entire army walking in front of them. Yeah, it's looking pretty fucked up there. But yeah, so this is an episode about the first one. Thaw is really so focused back on characters. You know, everyone is like kind of like regrouping. Wait, is it Thaw?
Yeah, Thaw was the one we missed.
Yes.
That's the one where like Mikasa and Armin and Jean like get everyone back into action to like protect mm-hmm. the people of the city.
Yep. They do that. And then meanwhile, we have Gabby, who basically is with what's his face? Reiner.
Yeah.
And Reiner's all fucked up and his like all this shielding has broke because I guess that like Eren made all the hardening of everyone disappear. So he's all fucked up and he's telling Gabby to get out of there. So Gabby meets up and finds the family again.
Sasha's family.
What's her name? Yeah, Sasha's family. And ends up doing this insane like jump shot kill on a Titan and just ends up saving one of the daughter's lives, like in a very epic fashion.
Yeah. And it's good. It does. And again, like Gabby has become like the moral heart of this show. And like Gabby's choice to save the daughter, even after the daughter has like tried to kill her, like at least once, I think maybe twice, mm-hmm. like shows this sort of like need to see beyond the conflict and like mm-hmm. this need for reconcilability. And the daughter then realizes that after and ends up saving Gabby's life by lying to the police.
Yep.
Which you should always do.
Yep. They don't talk to police. Sasha's family never will talk to a police. And that's brave of them. Yeah, there's this incredible scene right after. Yeah. Where they're like, Gabby's with the family, but obviously she's like from the other country and two soldiers find them and like are ready to just actually just, you know, kill Gabby on the spot. But they're like, no, she's with us. You know, she's not a Marleyan. And yeah, so it's like just saving each other and having empathy for each other.
They like recognize like, the family and then they're like, who's she? And then the other daughter jumps in and is like, that's my sister.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, these tiny, just, and you know, in the grand scheme of things, like in the face of apocalypse, there's people capable of tiny moments of kindness is, such a pot, like a, I don't know, an optimistic perspective amidst all of the chaos, you know,
yeah.
That maybe this show isn't as nihilist as people assume it might be.
Yeah, I think, I think the show is an interesting thing where it's, I don't know if it's going to show us what it looks like if you take the way out. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like it is proposing an idea of that there is a way out and what that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really good. And like, it's just, it was really interesting in this episode. It was good to see like Armin, Mikasa, Jean and Connie and everyone back in action mm-hmm. and like protecting people and like having a sort of momentarily unambiguous goal. And then it was great seeing that get hugely complicated when Flock shows up and is like, Yegris are in charge, baby. It's time for the takeover.
Yeah. What a troll. What a troll character. It's interesting. It's like, I was going to get to Flock in a second, but I just wanted to highlight on one moment before that scene where they're sort of killing off all the Titans that got turned by Titan juice by drinking all the wine and stuff. And so they like just used a bunch of thunder spears and had to kill them all off. But it was just really sad to see them kill the commander. That character Pyxis.
Yeah.
Like, Pyxis was always a G from like day one. And like, if you remember all the way back from like season one, when like we thought everything was absolutely just fucked for them right then, that he was just on the front lines, just taking a big swig and being like, we're going to figure this out. And he was the guy who trusted the kids, you know, and gave them a shot. And yeah, I don't know. It was really sad to see him go, but yeah, it was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, I mean, they it was really good in terms of just like forcing, like adding another layer of what they have to reckon with in the aftermath of like the rumbling and Aaron's whole thing. Right. Like the, and obviously that was like Zeke's plan or whatever, but like Aaron let it happen and stuff like that. And so more beyond just like, uh-oh, like these big old guys are going to go kill a bajillion people. The other part is like, oh, we have to kill people that we like know in order to like save ourselves. And that's a very fucked up thing. And just sort of another level of sort of this morality crisis they're all kind of going through that gets highlighted a lot more in the next episode. But
yeah. So then like everyone's kind of collected, they've killed the Titans, but then Flock shows up and he's like, I'm detaining all the volunteers and just doing like a coup within a coup with like the remaining soldiers. And it all just feels so like half baked and messy at this point. Cause it's like, how many people are even fucking left? And so they kind of end on that, and they end on realizing that, oh, wait a second, maybe the hardening undid a little someone we also forgot about from season one.
Yep. And that's sort of where episode two picks up with, not episode two, but the second episode we're going to talk about today picks up with a really good cold open.
Oh, yeah.
Where Hitch notices footsteps coming out of the basement and follows them, only to be accosted by Annie, who is no longer frozen in the hardening and is free. And according to her, just wants to go home. And we'll see if that's true or not. But that led to maybe my favorite frame of this season, if not this like entire fucking series, which was the wide of them riding on the horse with the sunset silhouetting with the Titan. Yeah. With like that, the foreground is them, the midground is the Titans, and the background is the sunset.
Yeah, dude, it was nuts.
That was like one of the most incredible just like images I've seen in a thing in a long, long time.
I know, I'm looking at it right now. I was like, I cannot wait just to see them continue to do this for like weeks and weeks and weeks, and then go from this to making new Berserk.
Yeah. Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
Whoa. Are they making it from the beginning?
I don't know, but there was an announcement.
Dude, imagine the Night of the Eclipse with this animation squadron.
I can't even.
It would be extremely content warning.
This is a studio that is one of the greats, one of the greats of our time. And it's breathtaking to watch the artwork here for sure. But yeah, there's some interesting things between these two characters. Like people might not remember much about Hitch, but she was actually like Annie's roommate. And they kind of have had a frenemy relationship for a long time. And so like Hitch knows a little bit more about like Annie and her deal. So I think it makes a lot more sense for both of these characters to sort of be ready to kill each other at any moment, but also both decide to leave and like get the fuck out of there on a horse together and have this longer conversation.
Yeah, it is really good. And it leads to a lot of like funny little moments, like when Hitch,
there's one of the best jokes in the show. Yeah, this episode,
when
Annie's like doing her backstory on the horse.
Yeah,
and then it cuts out, and Hitch is like, "What is this? Your life story?"
Yeah, that was pretty good. And then Annie's like, "I've heard you talk about shitty dudes so much. You owe me this one." And it's like they just have like a good dynamic. And it's like, again, like the confidence of the show is just like, we're gonna make it Hitch. Like Hitch is around. She has some connection to Annie. Everyone else is busy. Like, we're just gonna trust the audience to remember her. And if not, we're gonna make their dynamic like clear enough that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it feels like the show loves to all of a sudden shift to a character they've never almost never spent time with and show you that they have just as much of a filled in life as everyone else. And I think that is like a really incredible technique that is engaging and not distracting, at least for me personally.
Yeah, well, I also think it works again. Like, I think again that like it just humanizes the world so much in a way that also then makes the stakes of all of the stuff feel a lot more substantial. Mm-hmm. It's not just like these faceless guys are being killed off, but like we know that every character has a meaningful backstory because we've met so many characters who are just like one-offs with meaningful backstories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of backstories, this is Annie's backstory. We learn all about Annie. She was abandoned as a baby. I think her mom was like an Eldian, and like her father was a Marleyan.
Her mom had an affair with an Eldian.
Oh, yeah. OK, that's what it was. Yeah. And then they got abandoned, and then she got adopted by this like random dude in the camps. And he was just kind of like teaching her how to be strong and fight and do martial arts. He was this random guy from a different country who was like a third class citizen. And he always dreamed of turning Annie into one of the warriors so he could get a higher status, you know, and maybe even get out of the camps or whatever.
Yeah. Because when you become a warrior in Marley, your family becomes honorary Marleyans.
Yeah. So he had this very cold and terrible, parenting style of beating the shit out of her.
Yeah.
until she was able to beat the shit out of him. A classic technique that all parents use.
Yeah. A really dumb strat, honestly. If your kid is getting older and stronger and you're getting older and weaker, like eventually those lines are going to cross.
But then, of course, they do cross, and she does like break his leg, and he's like, "Epic poggers, we're totally going to get you in." And he's right. He trained this cold, heartless warrior, and she does become a warrior. And then right as she's set to go ship off, this bad dad has kind of a change of heart, and maybe says that he hopes that she can come back. Because he does care about her.
That's like my one big note on this episode is like, does he just get like bonked on the head by like a coconut or something? Like his personality just 180s. And he's like, "Oh, actually, sorry. I didn't mean everything I said for your entire life."
Yeah. It's weird because if you think about it, even when Annie is shipping out, she's like, what, like 13 or 14 years old?
Yeah.
Like, maybe even 12. Like, it was kind of crazy to send them out at all at that point, but it seems like a lot of her memories of her dad were from like a very young child perspective. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's like maybe the more nuanced stuff about her, like, you know, him showing any kind of emotion or whatever. I don't know. Like, he does seem kind of like a crazy 180, but I ended up buying it.
Yeah. That is fair. I mean, I bought it in the context of the episode, like that's the gist of it. It was like a really hard left for that guy to take in a show that's pretty meticulous about that stuff.
I would agree with you on that. But anyways, that's sort of her backstory. But then she does make the decision, I guess, to want to get back to her dad. And so we cut back to the Eldians that are in the camps in Marley. And that's sort of a really tragic situation.
Yeah, that's happening fucked. Over there. Because we learned that Aaron's crazy mega dream got to every Eldian everywhere.
Yeah. So like the ones who like are trapped in other places around the world are like, "Oh, I'm literally dead now."
Yeah, we're all dead. We're all getting rumblinged.
But the problem is that Discord at everyone tag only hit the Eldians. So they're trying to tell people, including Annie's dad. They're trying to tell the guards and warn them, but the guards don't believe them. And it looks like they're either arresting or going to execute Annie's dad for spreading, you know, fake news.
Yeah, it does look that way. It does, they're like desperately trying to lock them down. There's like a great moment where Annie's dad is sort of like, "Every Eldian of the other camps can tell you the exact same thing. You think we're all in on it?" And the guard's like, "Get over here." Like, shut up. I can't even think about this.
Yeah, I hate guards.
The other part we didn't mention about the Annie thing, by the way, really quickly, is that the reveal that she was awake the whole time.
She was like semi-awake, right? Where she could just like hear voices.
Yeah. And like, but otherwise she was like conscious, but in the dark. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, very fucked up to imagine.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. She should see a therapist if the world doesn't end.
Fair point.
So that's Annie's shit and sort of the tragedy of like what's happening with her father. And then we cut to a much, much needed scene between Mikasa and Armin.
Yeah, this came, I think, right on time.
And they're sort of just trying to like figure out what's next for them. And Mikasa keeps asking Armin like what she should do. And Armin's like, I don't know. I've got like 10,000 things that I'm trying to figure out right now. I don't even have emotional time to like think about Eren and what we should do. And which I thought was so interesting because, you know, I think a simpler version of the show is everyone's immediately like, let's all go and stop Eren now. But it is so much more complicated than that. But it is stressful because it does feel like there's this ticking time bomb and like it's almost like everyone like emotionally can't deal with it. So they're just putting it off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not even like I think they're necessarily putting it off, but that like there are some problems they like just cannot deal with right now that just like not even like in an emotional or mental sense, just like in a practical material sense, like they just need to like sit down and like get people together and figure out the fuck to do about Eren. But there are a lot of immediate problems they can do right now. And so that's, I think, sort of part of the math. And then obviously, we also learned in that scene that Armin's got insane guilt about being alive instead of Erwin. Which I think sets up Armin's eventual arc towards like becoming worthy of being alive. Although we only have a couple of episodes left, so we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like we have like 10 more. Just so much left to do. It's crazy. So there's that interaction between them, which I thought was very needed. And then we cut to Flock, who is doing just random bullshit, just executing volunteers, just going to town.
Yeah. Flock, like, Flock is really the Flock gene. I mean, obviously the Flock gene sort of juxtaposition is like a thing they've done before and will certainly continue to do, but they really like hit it at 11 in this scene where like at the beginning of the show, both Flock and Gene were sort of like interested in being MPs and living the fancy life and ended up in the Scouts for various reasons. But like the Flock is like so happy that now he can be like Eren's secret police and just like be a military police guy and not do anything or care about anything or anyone, just like be in like an Eren cop and then like chill. And he's so excited to let that like Gene can do that too. But Gene is like, has like learned things and is like, I don't 100% think I want to be that.
Right. Yeah. And it's also like, I don't know. I was confused because I didn't know there was a distinction between the volunteers and the Jaegerists. I thought they were all the same.
No, because there is a distinction because there wasn't a distinction until there became a distinction between Zeke and Eren's agendas. Right. And at that point, those become a distinction because the volunteers were all on board with Zeke's thing.
Oh.
And the Jaegerists were on board with the Zeke thing because so was Eren. But now that those two things have diverged, those two factions have diverged.
Okay. So the euthanasia people are getting rounded up basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I knew there were slight distinctions there, but I was a little confused. Okay, cool. So that's all happening. He's shooting people in the head. He does have this one-on-one with Gene where he's basically telling them, listen, this is the only option is to sign up and like be chill and like approve of me and Eren, because at the end of the day, you know, people believe in you two. You guys are war heroes. Just like retire and settle down now.
And not just it's your only option, but like it's the thing we've always wanted, right? Like that's the thing I was trying to say before, that like Flock is still operating from this very season one place of like, I want the authority position and the benefits and the not do anything. And Gene like definitely did want that at the beginning, but now sees like a moral imperative to like help people and whatnot. And is having a much different reaction to being presented with that possibility than he would have at season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Which is pretty cool and, so, and good writing.
I think it's good. I think it's opposites are genius.
Yeah, it's good to have a juxtaposition like that.
So that's going on. And also it really seemed like Flock knows that Mikasa and Jean could really fuck up his plans. So he's like really trying to get them on board.
Right.
But so that happens. And then as the episode's ending, we cut to Connie, who's still fucking stealing a poor little boy to feed to his mother.
Yeah. I loved this for a couple of reasons. I really liked that there weren't Titans in the background of this. Like this one image of this, like the most like singularly kind of heinous thing that is happening in terms of just like an individual making a gross choice is like happening in this like totally pristine environment. And I thought that was a fun contrast. And then I also just like, there's this thing happening in the scene where like Connie is confident, but concerned about Falco and is like clearly like having a little bit of doubt, and Falco can like clearly smell that something is going on.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty spicy. Also, obviously the foreshadowing with the asking Flock what happened to Hanjay and Levi, and then going from that to cutting into this makes me like very excited for where this goes.
Yeah. And you kept watching for the next scene, didn't you?
Did I miss something when I flipped your hands? Oh, what did I miss? Tell me about it.
Oh, baby. Okay. Yeah. So this was a very interesting ending because they rolled credits and then there is a preview for the thing, but before that there is more scenes.
Okay.
And in the scene after, we see Peak and her commander, and they are in a forest and they're watching the last of the Marleyan airships escape. And they're like, well, we're marooned here, but they had to go back to warn their homeland. And they're like, and it's like, okay, it's too late anyways. So they're watching the ships fly away. And then who do they run into in the forest but Hanji and Levi? And
oh, fuck yeah. I mean, I kind of figured that was an inevitable team up.
And Hanji comes out like a big troll and is just like, oh, hi. And she just wheels Levi out on a cart. And she's like, this guy refuses to die. And Levi is all fucked up and patched up and bloodied, but apparently alive. And then the episode ends.
I'll have to go watch that later. God, that is really excellent stuff. I kind of figured that was like an inevitable team up. And then I figure Falco will get in and on it with those guys as well. And that'll probably be the beginning of the anti-Aaron stuff.
Yeah. There'll be a forest people for a second when they're in the similar zone. But yeah, that was an exciting little final moment and a kind of a surprise little extra clip, not what they normally do.
Yeah. I thought that because they had the Connie and Falco scene right into the credits, I was like, oh, this is the last thing.
I almost missed it too. I almost missed it. So I'm glad I didn't.
I'm glad. But you
yeah, guys, that was a double whammy episode. I think it's so interesting that after the rumbling, we don't have anything new about the rumbling at all. It has been all character driven. And yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah. I like that the rumblings is what it is. They were like, it's going to kill most of the people. And as far as everything we've seen, it's like, just going to go kill most of the people. And like, you know, it's what's on the box.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy that. I think that's pretty fun. But that should be it for us this week, because we're already over an hour.
Buy, divest, and sanction the Eldian Empire.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, thanks for sticking around. We'll figure out a new schedule next week. Griffin's got some cool job stuff, as in having a new one.
I'm Lux's boss now.
It's not true. But we are co-workers now.
That is true. You're fired. Yeah, still, we are co-workers, so we have to figure things out.
Yeah. Okay. Because now
not only
we record during the workday, not only does the
does a wisecrack director take time off during the middle of the day? Also, the producer does. And that's not ideal. Like if,
it'd be like if Spider-Man and Mary Jane both disappeared in from their spaces. But if they were both working at the Daily Bugle.
Which one of them does do.
Which one of them is a freelance. Not a great metaphor.
Not your best work. But if you want to see some of our best work, you can go find Haley on YouTube and Instagram at Eat Every Sound. You can find Griffin on Twitter and TikTok at Griffin P. Davis or on Twitch at twitch.tv/Tomb Room. You can find me on Twitter at Tailboy, that's TAIL_BOI, and on twitch.tv/Pixel Goblins. Restream every Wednesday. And we're going to probably start adding a Monday stream about tactics games called Tactical Genius, but I will tell you more about that once that idea is more complete. Either way, glad to be back, and we'll see you guys next
and
week.
And go watch Wisecrack.
And go watch Wisecrack, why not?
Why not?
All right, talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.
Bye, we're so sorry.